Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Randy Alcorn on why he's pro-life.
The studies show that after a woman has an abortion, she becomes far more likely to commit suicide, to be addicted to drugs, to have all kinds of addictive behaviors. And where are the, quote, pro-choice people in supporting women as compared to where are the pro-life people? There is no comparison.
Randy Alcorn next on His People. As activists on both sides of the abortion issue, today marked the 34th anniversary of the U.S. Supreme Court's extremely divisive Roe v. Wade decision, today's guest believes many people still haven't heard the pro-life position articulately explained. To that end, Randy Alcorn has written the book, Why Pro-Life? He's founder and president of Eternal Perspective Ministries. Randy, you write, abortion is the defining issue of our age. Why?
Well, I think there's nothing else on the scale of it. There's nothing else with the moral implications of it. If one side is correct, what's called the pro-choice side, then you have a bunch of people out there that are trying to prevent people's exercise of basic human rights. It's a human rights issue. If the other side is correct, you have a large segment of society and the country officially, legally, as a whole, advocating, protecting the wholesale killing of a whole group of human beings. And the fact that these human beings are young and small and vulnerable makes it all the worse. And that's what's so ironic about this issue, because somebody will say, yeah, but come on, a fetus is only this big. And now you think of the logic of that. Adults are bigger than adolescents, and adolescents are bigger than, let's say, grade school children, who are bigger than preschool children, who are bigger than toddlers, who are bigger than little babies. So let's have a graduated scale of human rights that is based upon how old someone is and how big someone is, which I guess would mean that professional football and basketball players would have the most human rights, mm-hmm. and in the athletic realm, maybe jockeys would have the least. I mean, it's so bizarre. I mean, what does size have to do with anything? And yet, that's what people will say. And what does age have to do with it? In fact, our best instincts are to protect people precisely because they are small and young. I mean, that's even true with animals. If we see a big dog in a hazardous situation where another dog is, coming at him or something, we might have a different instinct than if we saw a little newborn puppy and this big dog was going after this little puppy. We'd say, no, we got to step in and intervene. Why? Because it's young and small. And yet we use exactly the opposite logic with these preborn children.
Randy, do you believe that many people, even believers, have never really heard the details of the pro-life position?
Absolutely. I think we have a lot of people out there who are pro-life, who are that because they know they're supposed to be. And every once in a while they'll hear somebody say abortion is bad. But there is a bunch of detailed factual information that most of these pro-lifers don't know. I mean, and consequently, it's easy for them to not hold fast to their position because they're ignorant of the facts. If we take a position when we don't have the facts in mind that should lead someone to that position, then it's going to be hard to defend it, and it's going to be hard to not only persuade others, but to believe in your heart, that it's true. And that's why people will get into situations where they have been pro-life, but now they're pregnant outside of marriage, or their daughter's pregnant outside of marriage. And I've even seen this happen with pastors before, and they're pro-life, and yet they end up driving their daughter to an abortion clinic because they never really were pro-life. It isn't that they've changed their position, it's that their position was a nominal one, and the substance and reality of it was not real to them.
Well, and it's interesting in your book, and I've heard this before too, that a lot of people would see explaining the pro-life position to a Christian audience as sort of preaching to the choir, but I think you point out in your book that actually a rather significant percentage of Christian, evangelical, Bible-believing people have abortions.
Absolutely. The choir's getting abortions.
Yeah.
I mean, one-fourth to one-fifth, depending on what studies you look at, of all women getting abortions in America profess to be evangelical Christians. That's amazing. If you then increase the number to look at all who are members of some Protestant or Catholic church, the number goes way up. As a matter of fact, one study, I think it was a Barna study, I cited in the book, shows that 70% of women getting abortions profess to be either Protestants or Catholics. They at least have a church affiliation.
Well, I'm talking with Randy Alcorn. He is the founder and director of Eternal Perspective Ministries. He's written many books. Today we're talking about his book, Why Pro-Life. Well, Randy, let's imagine that you just have a limited amount of time. Maybe you're sitting next to somebody on an airplane. Maybe you're talking to someone in a gathering, whatever it may be. Where would you start to explain the pro-life position? If someone says, why are you pro-life? Why do you believe abortion is wrong?
Well, I would start with the scientific facts, though. We don't need to maybe get into detail with most people that we're talking with on those, but just be able to say, you know, the science is clear in terms of the DNA, in terms of the fact that this is a unique human being who, if not hindered, will develop into a bigger and older human being. Studies that have to do with even in the early second trimester and late first trimester, preborn children experiencing pain. You know, there's a whole realm of the whole ultrasound thing, high-definition ultrasounds now, and the ability to look at the child in the womb. On the back of the Why Pro-Life book, I've got picture of a preborn child sticking his arm out of his mother's womb during the surgery and then being put back inside of his mother's womb and being born 2 months later. And then I've got a picture of a 3D ultrasound photo of a baby 21 weeks after, you know, conception. Here's this baby in detail. You're seeing facial expressions, eyes, cheeks, mouth, ears, nose. You see, you know, the hands. You can, on the one hand that's in the foreground, you can clearly count four fingers and a thumb. You know, this is just simple reality. And you can go to, you don't have to go to pro-life materials for this. You can go to Harvard University Medical School textbooks. I mean, but I would go beyond that because more and more people now are finding that they can no longer deny the reality. And I've heard pro-abortion people say, okay, we'll grant you this is a human being, but we still don't think that they should have as much, as many rights as adult human beings. And boy, you talk about a slippery slope there. Because this same child, what's the miracle of birth? I mean, okay, so birth happens, and now this child is moved 18 to 24 inches from where the child was located before. Has there been any fundamental change in this child? No, they're just, it's a location. I mean, that's like saying, okay, a person is in this room and they don't have any human rights, but if they walk through the door into this room, now they have full human rights. Well, that's silly. We recognize how silly that is. There's no difference between the person who was in the room. There's no difference with this child. This child, in terms of the mind, the body, and everything else, the fact that an umbilical cord has been cut does not, it makes a fundamental change of level of dependency in terms of, or location, but not level of dependency, because the child is still 100% dependent upon the care of human beings. So if you say that, well, this child is inconvenient before they're born and there's no right to interfere with the life of the parents, well, right, you think that's interference with the life of the parents. Think how much more interference there is once the child is born. Now you have to get up in the middle of the night with this child. And now you have to, and the same attitude that says, because this child is inconvenient and I don't want this child, and I don't want to have to do these things, nobody has the right to tell me what to do with this child, right? If it's okay to kill the child up until the day that they are born, then what's the big deal about slapping around that same child once they're born? Mm-hmm. And withholding food from them and neglecting them? We put people in jail for those things. And yet, we've taught people that, well, they have total rights over this. This baby's a commodity. It's theirs. They can do with it whatever they want, including kill it. Well, now the baby's born. Should we be surprised that it's different?
And has abortion addressed the issue of child abuse? Isn't there a well-known slogan out there, every child a wanted child, and if it's an unwanted child, then it's better off to be aborted than to be born and be abused?
Exactly. That's one of the things that I deal with in the book, that this whole, you know, every child a wanted child idea, you know, that's a slogan of Planned Parenthood. And what I say to people is, and even have done this in the past in debates with people with Planned Parenthood, I say, well, yes, every child a wanted child, I totally agree. And then they look at me like, what? You agree with our slogan? I say, yes, I think every child should be a wanted child. I said, the question is, how do you finish that sentence? And like, well, what do you mean, how do you? Well, every child a wanted child, so what? Here's how I finish it. Every child a wanted child, so let's want children more, and let's do all we can to get them into homes where they are wanted. That's how I finish it. Mm-hmm. Now, how do you finish the sentence? Well, they don't even think that it's been just a phrase. You know, every child a wanted child, so what? Well, here's how you finish the sentence, even though they wouldn't say it in these exact words, but this is the essence of what they're saying. I'm saying what you're really saying is every child a wanted child, so let's identify unwanted children before they're born and let's kill them.
Mm.
That's what every child, you know, a wanted child means. So, and I actually think that as I say in Why Pro-Life, I think that what this actually means is the real slogan of Planned Parenthood, that is what captures what they're really saying, though they would never say it this way, but it is what they are saying, is every unwanted child a dead child.
Randy, let me ask you a common objection that has been put forward for years regarding people who are pro-life and talk about the humanity of the unborn child and so forth, that, well, pro-lifers don't care really about women or the children once they're born.
Well, I think 20 years ago, a case could still be made for that, because I think there were people in the early times of speaking out about abortion. Certainly this would have been true 30 years ago, but even 20 years ago, still true in a lot of places. There were a lot of people who were speaking against abortion, but they weren't doing much to help people in crisis pregnancies. Well, as I document in Why Pro-Life, that situation has radically changed. The pregnancy centers that give free help to pregnant women, that give free pregnancy tests, that help give medical help, that do ultrasounds, that line people up with all kinds of support groups, right down to helping provide babysitting once the child is born, all kinds of classes, prenatal care, the providing of free clothing for children, bassinets, children's, you know, furniture, milk, I mean, you name it, on and on and on. The pro-life movement in America has become the single greatest volunteer people-helping movement in human history. Now, that sounds like an overstatement when you first hear it. But if you compare the number of people, for instance, let's say, who are volunteers with the American Cancer Society, or who, I mean, you take any good cause, or people who work with the things related to AIDS and multiple sclerosis and, you know, on and on. If you actually look at the numbers of people and the finances and the volunteer help and the financial gifts and all of this kind of stuff, it is an incredible movement involving hundreds of thousands of people who are volunteering everything from carpentry work to repairing the photocopy machine in these pregnancy centers, all to help women who don't feel like they have other alternatives. I don't know how to have a child and raise a child. I don't know what to do. We'll help you. And it is a helping movement of people. And lest somebody think, oh, well, yeah, but that's only if people choose their direction, and that is to keep the child rather than to have an abortion. No, because there are post-abortion therapy groups lovingly conducted. Thousands and thousands and thousands of them are going on right now, spread out all over this country and in different parts of the world, helping women and men, but in particular women, overcome the trauma that abortion has brought into their lives. Now, where are the abortion clinics which will kill your baby if you pay them a certain amount of money? What are they doing? Where are the pro-choice groups that are helping women who are suicidal because of their abortions and addicted to drugs and all of the things that are simply factually, the studies show that after a woman has an abortion, she becomes far more likely to commit suicide, to be addicted to drugs, to have all kinds of addictive behaviors. And where are the, quote, pro-choice people in supporting women as compared to where are the pro-life people? There is no comparison.
Randy, a big question that comes up in this discussion is ultimately it's a women's rights issue that women should be able to do what they want with their own bodies.
Well, I think one of the things that I do in the book is I go back historically to feminist history, go back to Susan B. Anthony and other well-known feminists who spoke out adamantly against abortion and called it a man's way of exploiting women. Men don't have to take responsibility now. They can have sex with a woman, get her pregnant, and then solve the problem by bringing more harm and damage to the woman's life by, you know, funding this abortion and feeling like, well, they've done their duty and they can just go right on and sleep with another woman and get her pregnant. Well, they used to speak out, you know, very strongly against abortion and the harm that it would do, not only to a child, but to a woman. That was what feminism was. Feminism changed with Margaret Sanger, who advocated abortion as a means of eugenics.
The founder of Planned Parenthood.
Exactly. Margaret Sanger, founder of Planned Parenthood, and I quote from her several times in the book, it's absolutely shocking. I have read the original writings, and this is not just quotes that I read that somebody, I went and got photocopy or actual copies and made photocopies of the original article she wrote in the Birth Control Review, and she was a eugenicist who believed that abortion was the way of getting rid of the growing numbers of black and Hispanic and Asian people in America. She was a racist through and through, and she was the founder of Planned Parenthood, and she believed that we've got to control the population of these minority groups, or minorities are going to poison our country because they are inferior. That is exactly what she taught. That's not an exaggeration, and I've got the citations to prove it. That changed the course of feminism. And they're one of my favorite pro-life groups is Feminists for Life. And here's a group of women who believe the basic tenets of feminism in terms of women's rights, and we should all believe in women's rights, but who say that women's rights are not served by saying they can take the life of their child, which they will always regret and will bring untold damage to them, as well as being a human rights violation itself. What we need to do is realize that human rights, one person's human rights ends when it comes to the death of another human being. And that's where we have to figure out what not only rights but responsibilities. And one of the things I really advocate in Why Pro-Life is that we've got to help men come to terms with their responsibilities in fathering and raising children.
What about the phrase that, well, I'm personally opposed to abortion, but I think it should still remain legal?
That's like saying, well, you know, I'm personally opposed to rape. I would never rape someone. I just want to make that clear. But, you know, I'm okay with other people making the decision to rape. We would immediately say, now, wait a minute. The only good reason for being against rape in the first place means you should also be against other people raping people. Exactly the same is true of abortion. If I have these personal convictions about abortion, well, I'm personally against abortion. What I always say when somebody says that to me is why? To me is why? I ask them, well, why are you personally opposed to it? And I, one time there was a pro-choice radio interviewer who had me on and said, well, now I'm, you know, personally I wouldn't, you know, or whatever, but I think other people should have the right to. I said, well, wait a minute, why are you against it personally? Why would you be against it personally? And it's very interesting because then she says, well, you know, it's a tough decision. I said, well, what makes it a tough decision? It's not a tough decision to have your appendix out or to have your tonsils out. You just do it. You get rid of what you don't want. It's bringing harm to you. And if this is just a blob of tissue or flesh, you know, just get rid of it. What's the big deal? And then she says, well, no. I mean, it's not because it's, well, you know, it's a, and then she used the B word, a baby.
Yeah.
And as soon as she said it, she knew what she'd done. And she said it. I didn't say it. She did. In other words, in explaining why this is such a difficult thing, you get to the fact that we all know this is a child. And it slays a mother to take the life of her child.
Randy, the last question I have for you is one aimed particularly at the Christian community. I've heard... It said that, you know, if you're not careful at being involved in either supporting a pro-life ministry or somehow getting involved in helping women in crisis pregnancies or whatever the case may be, it is really a great distraction from the Great Commission.
Well, yeah, when people say that, I think it's chapter 19 of the book where, you know, I deal with that, I'm just amazed. I tell them the story of William Carey. You know, who went over and he's called the father of modern missions. And what did he do? He goes to India. He sees widow burning. He stands up against it. He sees euthanasia. He sees sick and dying family members left out in the cold to die instead of be cared for. And what he and the other missionaries around him did was they cared for these people. They took them into their home. They stood up, they protested, and actually wrote missionary journal articles against the practice of widow burning. In other words, they were very involved in human rights. These people were missionaries. We call them we call William Carey the father of modern missions, and he didn't just preach the gospel, he lived the gospel. So when we talk about the Great Commission, it doesn't just say we're to evangelize. Of course we're to evangelize. But we are to make disciples, teaching people to observe everything that Jesus told them. Now, what did Jesus tell them? Well, did he tell them about the Good Samaritan? About when somebody's in need, you stop and help that person? Oh, no, but Good Samaritan activities are a distraction from the main thing, which is the Great Commission. Well, obviously, Jesus didn't think so. He said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. These things are fundamental to the gospel. They are fundamental to the Christian life. And this idea that, oh, well, abortion is just a political issue. Come on. That's like saying the rights of Jewish people in Nazi Germany was just a political issue. These are human beings created in the image of God, who Jesus went to the cross for, who God loves, and who we are to love and protect.
You've been listening to His People on the Pilgrim Radio Network. Many thanks to today's guest, Randy Alcorn, president of Eternal Perspective Ministries and author of Why Pro-Life. For more info, go to their website, epm.org.